What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike to tell you along with Charlie Long. Got a full kind of hour of football to talk about. We're going to crank it up right away, and we're going to go to our talking text line to a guy I've known for quite a few years, and he's become the authority on college football for On3 Sports, Chris Lowe. Chris, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon.
Hey, Mike. It's always good to be with you, my friend.
Chris, when you got into the college, because you started off, you covered the Panthers. I know you and I had a lot of conversations when the Panthers first started to crank up in the NFL, and you transitioned over when you were at ESPN to college football. But you ever think you'd see all the change that you see today? And the way the calendar is, it kind of set all this up to happen. But it's been a wild month for college football.
No, well, your first question, no, I didn't ever see it getting to this point. Just the chaotic nature that the sport's in, Mike. But no, this month has been really a month and a half almost. It's been about as crazy as you can imagine. You know, with coaches coming and going, and you know, Lane Kiffin leaving a playoff team to go to LSU, and you've got, you know, the awful stuff at Michigan with Sean Moore, and just coaches that are coaching teams in playoff games that are already hired elsewhere. I'm talking about coordinators. You know, you got two at Oregon, you got Hartline at Ohio State. You can sort of look around all the teams that are left, and you find it everywhere. And then the player move. I mean, so much, Mike, is made among fans and sometimes coaches about players jumping around, which they do. I mean, that's the world we live in right now. But you know what? After the last month with all the coach movement, it's going to be hard for coaches to say much about that.
No, they have nothing to say. The way I look at it, you got squat. Right. And assistant coaches and head coaches, they've been doing this for years. And I didn't hear a big outcry from the general public, but now – when players started moving, you know, you hear it. I want it back to when I watch football with my daddy and my grandpa. Well, I hate to break it to you, but you're not going back to that. The genie's out of the bottle. And where it sort of ends, I think, that part none of us can look at. Let's go through the playoff scenario, and I'll take it to the first game, Miami of Florida, Ohio State. When I look at Ohio State, Charlie and I have talked about this. I think they're the most talented team. And that's hard to say when you had 14 draft choices or 13 draft choices and four undrafted free agents signed into the NFL a year ago. And look how Ryan Day has pieced this together. If he wins it all again, I'll say this. I think this is the best coaching job Ryan Day's ever had as a college head coach at Ohio State. For him to come back from all those losses and key losses and be able to piece this team together. And with Miami, they'll go as far as the quarterback Carson Beck will take them. And sometimes with Carson, you don't know what you're going to catch.
Well, you know, the Ohio State probably has done as good a job as anybody at recruiting and developing kids the last few years, Mike, and you're right. You look at all the guys they lost off that championship team last year. I mean, just look at the front seven on defense. And then, you know, some of those guys up front, the offensive line, you lose your quarterback, your running back. But they still, and again, it speaks to the quality of recruiting and getting the best kids. They still got probably the two best receivers in college football on their roster. And they've got a guy throwing to them who was third or fourth in the Heisman balloting, and he's still got a couple. Think about this. Their two best players are back next year. Julian Sayin's back at quarterback, and Jeremiah Smith's back at receiver. They can't go into the draft. I think, and then on defense, you know, they've been able to sort of plug in guys in the transfer portal if they need at key spots, a la Caleb Downs at safety, who's probably the best defensive back in America. So, yeah, you're right. He's done a great job of plugging holes, bringing in the right guys, and developing guys. I mean, you look at their defensive front this year, you know, and guys that maybe a year or two ago weren't household names, like Reese, the big kid in the middle. They're both guys that are going to hear their name called pretty quickly in the NFL draft. So I agree with you. I think they are the most talented team. Again, I think it speaks to what they've done recruiting and going out and getting guys. And once they get on campus, even if they don't play a lot their first year, they're ready to go and step in like so many of these guys have this year, losing as many guys as they lost off last year's championship team.
Chris, Ole Miss, Georgia in the Sugar Bowl, and that'll be played New Year's night. A look at that game, and Herb Tyler and I, we doing a Tiger tailgate, and we watching, and it was like a ping-pong match. Okay, Georgia scored, Ole Miss scored. Georgia scored, Ole Miss scored. And then all of a sudden we look up, Ole Miss has got a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter. And I give Georgia a lot of credit. Not that Ole Miss's defense really could stop them, but they were able to get the W and put the only blemish on the Ole Miss schedule so far. Chris, I got a feeling Georgia better strap it up, because I think, man, I don't know how a team reacts when you don't play for basically a month. And you see how talented this Ole Miss team is with a Trinidad Chambliss at quarterback, with Kawan Lacy. And I know he's banged up, but, man, he is a thunder back. And then the receivers they have, the tight end, they can hit you so many different ways. Do you think this is going to be a similar type game than what we saw during the regular season, where it will be kind of a ping-pong type game, you score, I score?
Yeah, I was at that game, and, you know, Georgia, nobody stopped anybody.
Yeah.
Until the fourth quarter. Georgia didn't punt a single time in that game. And Georgia, the Dogs, made two stops, Mike, in the fourth quarter that sort of changed the complexion of that game. I think Georgia's got a lot better on defense since that game. They may have been a sort of a point in the season that Georgia needed, because you look at what they've done since then. Now, maybe they haven't played anybody quite that explosive. Well, they did play Bama in the SEC title game. Georgia Tech can score points, and they shut them down. The defense, I think, has gotten better. I think Ellis Robinson on the back end at corner has allowed them to do more things on defense, rush more, blitz more. So how much better are they? I think we start to find out in this game defensively. As for Ole Miss, I agree with you. Football is just not a sport. I don't know any sport that is, where you go as long as Georgia has gone and you don't play a football game, and then you're fresh and sharp. So if they don't start well, if this game doesn't go well for the Dogs early, and Ole Miss gets out to a pretty quick start, you wonder how Georgia will react. It's hard in the SEC, Mike. If you go back 15 years, I know you've done this, you don't see it oftentimes where an SEC team beats the other twice in 1 year.
That's right.
You go all the way back to LSU and Bama in 2011. You go back to Georgia and Auburn in 2017, some of those Alabama-Georgia games in 21 and 22. OU and Alabama this year. You know, so you just don't see that often in an SEC. When you play twice in the season, that one team wins both games.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Chris, the Rose Bowl. I mean, Indiana versus Alabama. And I think if a lot of people would say these two teams were matching up in the playoffs, you know, Kurt Cignetti revived that program last year, got him to the playoffs. I don't think people would have been stunned. But when you talk about the seeding, Indiana being the one seed, Alabama being a nine seed, Indiana being over a touchdown favorite in this matchup, I think that would have shocked a lot of people kind of entering the year. At the same time, this Alabama team's been on a really fascinating journey throughout the year, where you lose your opener to Florida State, but then you rebound in the middle of the season, get really, really hot, and then you suffer some injuries and you really stumble to the finish line. that SEC championship game get bludgeoned by Georgia, but then all of a sudden you're down 17-0 in the first round of the playoffs at Oklahoma, and you make that massive comeback to move on to the second round, the quarterfinal round. But Indiana being the opponent, and Indiana's just been fantastic all year, and they have their Big Ten championship victory over Ohio State that really cemented the season that they had. Just want to get your thoughts on this matchup, because I think it's pretty fascinating, all the different storylines of both these teams going out to California, and also, you know, the kind of sub-storyline of Kalen DeBoer being awesome against top 25 ranked opponents in his career, whether it be at Washington, now at Alabama. It just feels like his teams typically play up to their competition level.
Yeah, Bama's probably the team that I've had the hardest time get my hands around this season, because just when I was ready to maybe write them off, you know, they do what they did in the middle of the season. They win four straight games against ranked teams. They come back and play well late in the season, then they get bombarded by Georgia in the SEC championship game. They start off awful against OU and score 27 in a row unanswered to win that game in a tough, tough place to play. And so they just seem to be all over the map. And I think part of it is, you know, they've had some guys injured. They had some injuries. They have, I thought Kane Wong's defense played pretty well towards the latter part of the season. They didn't play as well early against OU, but I think that's the key. Can they play well enough on defense to force Indiana into some turnovers, to put Mendoza in some tough situations? Can they get some pressure on them? Because here's the thing, Bama hasn't shown anybody they can run the ball this year. And it's hard for me to believe that they're going to go in against Indiana. And I've seen Indiana twice this year live and run for 30 or 40 yards and expect to win that football game, unless they can produce some negative plays on defense and get some short fields, score on defense, which Alabama's been really good this year. You go back to some of the games they've won, bigger games, they've made those kind of big plays on defense. I think that's what it's going to take against an Indiana team. I'm a believer. I think they're good up front. I know they're good up front. They've got an elite corner in Pons. Mendoza's a Heisman Trophy winner. He's got two receivers in Cooper and Surratt, who both are just excellent route runners and make big plays. Losing Daly, their edge rusher, is a blow for them. I don't know if they can realistically expect to replace him, a guy who is as productive as he was. But this is a game of all of them I'm probably looking forward to the most, because Indiana, I think they're what I've seen this year twice, but you still want to see them go do it against an SEC team that has played a really difficult schedule and should be battle-tested, and it's Alabama.
Chris, Orange Bowl, Texas Tech, Oregon, and when the transfer portal opened up last year, man, I see this guy signing with Texas Tech and this guy signing and then a third and a fourth. I'm like, damn, you know, okay, this is Lubbock, Texas now. And so I've got Tim Brando on to do the show with me. And before the show, I was like, Timmy, have you seen what's going on at Texas Tech? And he sort of knew a little bit about my background before the sports commentary, sports world. He was like, it's your boy, Cody Campbell, that he's pumped like $40 million into the Tech athletic program. And a lot of it is going to football. And during the summer, we were talking about it. I didn't know how all these pieces would all mesh, because when you get that many guys that are coming in all at one shot, how does it actually kind of fit to make the puzzle right? And Tim was a lot more confident than I was that it would happen and happen very quickly at Texas Tech. Now look where they are now. One blemish on the record, and that was only because their starting quarterback was down. I look at Oregon, and I'm a big fan of Dan Lanning. I think he's a hell of a coach. But I don't think this is the Oregon team of 2024 or of 2023. And I think Texas Tech got a legit shot here, big time, to beat the Ducks.
Well, you know, Texas Tech is sort of the poster child for what you're asking me at the outset of our conversation about the way the game and sports changed. Is if you're going to spend the cash, and remember, they were able to spend a lot of this cash and front load it back before the rev share model started in July. So they were able to go out and essentially bring in who they wanted to and pay what they wanted to. Now it's going to be allegedly more difficult to do that now with the college sports commission and rev share and what you can and can't do. But no, they went out and very strategically, Mike, brought in guys at key positions, skill positions up front, the front seven. And you start talking about guys, when I went through and did our All-America team this year, and I started looking at defensive players, difference makers, guys who are finishers, they've got two or three of those guys on the defensive side of the ball that anybody in America would take in a minute. And, of course, we're talking about Rodriguez. And they just have been able to sort of stockpile those guys and play at a really high level. I don't think the top of the Big 12 is as tough as the top of the Big 10 or the SEC. But when you look at their schedule, and you're right, they got just the one loss. This is sort of an example, a test case for that, because Oregon was, you know, one of the top three or four teams in the Big Ten this year. And so they play Oregon, neutral field. I saw Oregon against Indiana this year. Dante Moore did not play particularly well in that game. I think he's gotten better and settled down. It looks like a receiver. They've gotten a little bit healthier. I think that's going to be important in this game. But I'm with you. I think with what Texas Tech has done and the way they've sort of crafted that roster the way they have, I think they got a chance against anybody. And who would have thought, you know, 10 years ago, that we get to this point? You got Ohio State out there and Georgia out there and Alabama out there and Oregon out there, that we'd be saying, well, you know, Texas Tech, they got a legit shot. Well, they do.
Chris, the last thing for you is the fact that people think, okay, you got all this money, and if you throw it, it's going to work. But what I give Texas Tech and Coach McGuire and even Lane Kiffin and his staff at Ole Miss was the ability to find the right players for what they do. Talent evaluation. We talk so much about it in the NFL, but now it's the same sort of thing in college football. You can go out and spend all kind of money on players, but do they fit right? Is it the right guy for your scheme and system? And I think what you're watching at Ole Miss and what Coach Kiffin and his staff did there and what Coach McGuire's done at Texas Tech has been about money, yes, but also about right talent evaluation. And I think sometimes it gets overlooked.
Yeah, getting the right guys. I mean, Trinidad Chalmers is a great example of that. I mean, nobody knew who that kid was. They saw tape on him. They looked at what they did on offense, the way he would fit, his ability to throw and pass, how twitchy he was, and look at what he's done this year. He's probably been, when you look at transfer guys, guys that maybe weren't on everybody's top 10 transfer list, I don't know if there's been a more impactful transfer in college football than Trinidad Chambliss.
I agree with you. And that Bailey guy at Texas Tech's pretty good on defense, too. Though I saw him when he was at Stanford. He was pretty good there also.
Yeah, well, you're right. It's getting the right guys, guys that fit, guys that are coachable, guys that aren't looking at the number. But, hey, I got a chance to make a whole lot more money than I would get in NIL if I go this place and play my way up draft boards. And, oh, by the way, maybe win a championship.
Chris, thanks so much for joining us. You do a great job for On3 Sports, and can't thank you enough for joining us here. If I don't get to talk to you, happy new year, my friend.
Same to you guys. Thanks for having me, Mike. You guys take care.
Thanks,
all
Chris.
Right, thank you. Chris Love does an absolutely fabulous job covering college football. He's broken so many stories over the last couple of weeks for On3 Sports.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.